There was a cartoon a number of years ago that showed a preacher preparing to enter the pulpit, only it looked like a fortress. He was peering through the crack of a machine gun nest. The caption read, "Today my text is, Wives Submit to Your Husbands." It's probably a good thing that we're going to look today at Peter's words not only to wives but to husbands as well. It is important that we not miss the balance. Hear the word of God from 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. "Wives, in the same way, accept the authority of your husbands, so that even if some of them do not obey the word, they may be won over without a word by their wives' conduct, when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. Do not adorn yourselves outwardly by braiding your hair and by wearing gold ornaments or fine clothing. Rather, let your adornment be the inner self, with the lasting beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in God's sight. It was in this way long ago that the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves by accepting the authority of their husbands. Thus Sarah obeyed Abraham and called him Lord. You have become her daughters as long as you do what is good and never let fears alarm you. Husbands, in the same way, show consideration for your wives in your life together, paying honor to the woman as the weaker sex, since they too are also heirs of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing may hinder your prayers." First, we have to understand something of the cultural context into which Peter speaks this word. It may seem strange that Peter has 6 verses of advice to wives and only 1 to husbands. That is because the position of the Christian wife was so much more difficult in his day than that of the Christian husband. If a man became a Christian, he had the authority to bring his family with him to church. Not so the wife. Her decision to follow Christ put her in a very precarious situation. In Peter's day, women had no rights at all. Under Jewish law, she was a thing, not a person, really. For a wife to change her religion was unthinkable. In Greek culture, it was the duty of the wife to remain inside and obey her husband at all times. In Roman law, similarly, a woman had no rights. So what was a woman to do in Peter's time if she went against her husband and became a Christian? Peter makes it clear, like Paul in 1 Corinthians 7, that the Christian wife should not leave her husband. Rather, she should do something in a way very simple. She should remain with her husband and be a good wife. As William Barclay says, it is by the silent preaching of the loveliness of her life that she must break down the barriers of prejudice and hostility and win her husband for her new master. The key word that Peter uses can be translated submitting yourselves. In other words, Peter urges Christian wives to go on submitting to their husbands, ordering themselves under their husbands, just as they have done in the past. However, the whole goal here is for Christian wives to win their non-Christian husbands to the Lord by the purity and reverence of their lives. I knew a woman in a church I served a number of years ago. She was a Christian and her husband was not. This woman had, let's just say she had a strong personality. Her husband, on the other hand, was a quieter type. Now, this woman insisted on having a daily devotional time with her husband, and she would lead the devotions. Furthermore, she said if her husband objected to her being involved in ministry all the time, that was just too bad. Talk about living her life in a way calculated to push her husband away from the Lord. It seemed she was doing just that. Contrast that with the example of Monica, the mother of St. Augustine, who lived in the 4th century. Warren Wiersbe writes, "God used Monica's witness and prayers to win both her son and her husband to Christ, though her husband was not converted until shortly before his death. Augustine wrote in his Confessions, 'She served him as her Lord, and did her diligence to win him unto thee, preaching thee unto him by her conversation,' that is, her behavior, 'by which thou ornamentest her, making her reverently amiable unto her husband.'" I think Monica was doing just what the Lord had in mind. Realize, wives, that if you do this, you may just make your husbands wonder what in the world is going on. Currently, I'm writing a book about Sheldon Van Auken, who was a professor at Lynchburg College in Virginia for many years. Van, as his friends called him, and his wife Davy, became believers through the witness of C.S. Lewis. Davy became a believer first, and then Van followed her. However, she remained the stronger of the two. Van later wrote this about his wife's devotion to the Lord. So, Davy went on reading the Bible, and I went on not reading it much. I read other things, novels and mysteries, which she didn't have time to read. No longer in loyalty to our love were we reading the same books. How could I say, stop reading Isaiah and read Marjorie Allingham? Besides, if she did, I'd have to read Isaiah. And the old sharing was going in another way. She was becoming wifely. She was accepting St. Paul on women and wives. She seemed to want to be domestic and make things in the kitchen. I was afraid she might actually obey me if I issued a command. There was something very humble and good in her attitude towards me, as well as towards Christ. A humble vocation. But it wasn't like her. I almost wanted a fight. Eventually, Van came to a deeper commitment to Christ, and his wife's quiet witness pointed the way. Thus, the first point that Peter makes is that submission is an opportunity for the wife to win her husband to Christ. Peter's second point is that submission is an ornament. Remember how Augustine talked about the Lord making his mother's submission to his father an ornament that made her life beautiful and attractive? Peter says something similar. Do not adorn yourselves outwardly by braiding your hair and by wearing gold ornaments or fine clothing. Rather, let your adornment be the inner self with the lasting beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in God's sight. Warren Wiersbe summarizes Peter's point by saying, beauty comes from the heart, not from the store. All of the items of adornment Peter mentions were the height of fashion at the time, but Peter is saying, don't worry about being a fashion plate. Focus on developing inner beauty. Now, this doesn't mean that Christian women need to go around wearing rags, no jewelry, no makeup. Again, as Warren Wiersbe has said, we are not of this world, but that doesn't mean we have to look like we came from out of this world. As my mother often pointed out to me when I was growing up, looking your best is a service to those who have to look at you. What Peter is saying here is simply that external appearance is relatively unimportant, and internal virtue should be our prime pursuit in life. Women, your beauty should be that of a gentle and quiet spirit. In the book On This Day by Carl Windsor, the page for Valentine's Day includes this anecdote. Even the most devoted couple will experience a stormy bout once in a while. A grandmother, celebrating her golden wedding anniversary, once told the secret of her long and happy marriage. On my wedding day, I decided to make a list of 10 of my husband's faults, which, for the sake of our marriage, I would overlook, she said. A guest asked the woman what were some of the faults she had chosen to overlook. The grandmother replied, "To tell you the truth, my dear, I never did get around to listing them. But whenever my husband did something that made me hopping mad, I would say to myself, 'Lucky for him, it's one of the 10.'" What a great example of a gentle and quiet spirit. Peter gives Christian wives an example to follow in this regard. Sarah. How did Sarah submit to Abraham? When the Lord called Abraham to go to the promised land, Sarah didn't ask questions. She simply went with him. Have you ever had a hard time submitting to a move that your husband felt he had to make because of his work? What about when your husband makes a poor decision? Do you have trouble submitting then? Once Abraham got to the promised land, there was a famine. So Abraham decided, apart from God's counsel, to go down to Egypt. Again, Sarah submitted, even though she may have thought Abraham was making a bad decision. Once they were in Egypt, Abraham asked Sarah to tell everyone that she was his sister, which was true. She was his half-sister. But he wanted her to say that so that if somebody wanted her for his harem, Abraham's own neck would be spared. Sarah submitted even to this, though she may have thought it deceptive on Abraham's part, and she probably figured they would get into trouble. However, she submitted to her husband, and committed the result to God. What happened? Sarah ended up in Pharaoh's harem. However, God brought Abraham and Sarah out of Egypt and blessed the couple in spite of Abraham's sin. Later on, Abraham tried the same routine with Abimelech, another king, and Sarah submitted again, despite how things turned out the first time. Again, she ended up in Abimelech's harem. Once again, the Lord rescued her and gave even greater wealth to Abraham through Abimelech. I think this blessing was due to Sarah's obedience, not Abraham's shrewdness. What do you do when your husband makes a bad decision? Certainly you should offer him your advice beforehand. Certainly you should not commit any sin yourself just because your husband is doing something wrong, as Abraham did. However, once your husband makes the bad decision, how do you respond? Do you trust God to bring good out of it anyhow? That's what Sarah did. She submitted to Abraham and trusted God in less than ideal circumstances. Perhaps her witness helped her husband to eventually become a more mature man of God. Peter says, "You have become Sarah's daughters as long as you do what is good and never let fears alarm you." It would have been easy for Sarah to give in to fear, considering some of Abraham's crazy ideas. Perhaps the Lord is saying to you today, don't be afraid. Just submit and trust me to work things out. Now let's turn to Peter's words to husbands. Husbands, in the same way, show consideration for your wives in your life together, paying honor to the woman as the weaker sex, since they too are heirs of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing may hinder your prayers. There is displayed here what William Barclay calls a reciprocal ethic. The New Testament never places all the responsibility on one side of a relationship. Rather, God's Word speaks to both parties in every relationship. And it speaks not of their rights, but of their responsibilities. This was something new in the ancient world. As Barclay points out, in the Roman moral code, all the obligation was on the wife and all the privilege with the husband. Not so in Christianity. What are the responsibilities of the Christian husband that Peter spells out here? First, Peter commands Christian husbands to show consideration to their wives. Literally, the Greek text says, dwelling together according to knowledge. Husband, are you living with your wife according to knowledge? Someone once asked Mrs. Albert Einstein if she understood Dr. Einstein's theory of relativity. She replied, "No, but I understand the doctor." Husband, do you understand your wife? Do you know her moods, feelings, needs, fears, and hopes? There's an exercise often given to couples in premarital counseling. They're asked to write down three things that each one thinks the other enjoys doing. Very often the woman will make an immediate list and the man will ponder it for a few minutes. The interesting thing is that most often the woman is right and the man is wrong. Gary Smalley, who's written numerous books on marriage, has said, "I would venture to say that most marital difficulties center around one fact. Men and women are totally different. The differences, emotional, mental, and physical, are so extreme that without a concentrated effort to understand them, it is nearly always impossible to have a happy marriage." A famous psychiatrist once said, "After 30 years of studying women, I asked myself, what is it they really want?" If this was his conclusion, imagine how little we know about our wives. Husbands, we need to make a greater effort to understand our wives. We need to ask more questions, do more listening, less talking. Secondly, Peter says that we need to pay honor to the woman as the weaker sex. Now, I know that in our day this phrase has received a lot of bad press. However, I think what Peter very simply is saying is that most women are physically weaker than most men. In the ancient world, remember, there was no such thing as chivalry. For example, the husband would often ride on the donkey while the wife would walk by his side. Christianity introduced the idea of chivalry to the world, the idea of men treating women with greater courtesy than they treat other men. Husbands, this means we need to protect our wives physically and emotionally. Did you know that every year in America, somewhere between 3 and 6 million women are the victims of domestic violence? That ought not to be. Christian husbands should be showing there is a better way. The writer Somerset Maugham had a mother who was very beautiful. In fact, the world lay at her feet because of her loveliness. Yet, Somerset Maugham's father was not very handsome. One day, someone asked Maugham's mother, "Why do you remain faithful to that ugly little man?" Her answer was, "Because he never hurts me." That's what should be said of every Christian husband, that we never hurt our wives. We ought to protect our wives and cherish them. We should treat them like expensive, beautiful, fragile vases in which precious treasure is held. Thirdly, Peter says that Christian husbands should honor their wives as fellow heirs of the gracious gift of life. We need to remember that men and women stand on level ground at the cross. In ancient times, women didn't have an equal share in Greek, Roman, or Jewish worship. Christianity changed all of this. Jesus put women on an equal footing with men. Christian husbands need to follow Christ's example in the way he treated women. We need to respect our wives' feelings, thoughts, and desires. We may not always agree, but we can always show respect with Christ's help. Rod Weckworth of West Sacramento, California, says that his life has been guided by several axioms. And one of those is, never argue with your wife while she's packing your parachute. Very important principle to follow. A fourth responsibility of husbands that Peter alludes to here is prayer. Peter assumes that Christian husbands will be praying men. Husbands, we need to pray with and for our wives. Peter says that if husbands don't treat their wives properly, then their prayers will be hindered. Literally, our communication with God will be cut off. Why? We cannot be in a proper relationship with God when we don't love our fellow human beings, especially those closest to us. I think Peter would have agreed with 1 John 4:20. If anyone says, "I love God," yet hates his brother, he is a liar. For anyone who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. Husbands, are we loving our wives? Are we praying with and for them? Men don't usually pay attention to the braiding of hair. That's woman's work, right? However, the braiding of hair provides an important illustration of what Peter's talking about here. A braid appears to contain only 2 strands of hair, yet it's impossible to create a braid with only 2 strands. If the 2 could be put together at all, they would quickly unravel. Herein lies the mystery. What looks like 2 strands requires a 3rd. The 3rd strand, though not immediately evident, keeps the other 2 strands tightly woven. In a Christian marriage, God's presence, like the 3rd strand in a braid, holds the husband and wife together. Prayer is one of the key ways we welcome God's presence into our homes. We need Jesus in our homes. We need Jesus in our marriages. We need Him to forgive us and cleanse us by His shed blood on the cross when things go wrong in marriage. We also need the daily presence of His Holy Spirit to help us live out our marriages as He wants us to do. Therefore, let us ask Him for His presence in our homes right now.